Here.
Jason Caffarella. Gina Virtuoso.
Here.
Bonnie Sloma.
Here.
Kevin Clark.
Here.
Gary Wolfgang.
Here.
Eric Lipp.
Present.
Okay, just in case, Katie Alexander, I didn't expect her to, or Sheila Smith.
Okay, fine. Okay. When they come in, we'll pick them up, but sometime around 1 o'clock or that. That's fine. Yes.
I'd also like to run down the administration too, just for the record. Starting out with Dr. Moore. Oh. Dr. Morbido. All right, I guess we'll have to hold off. Deb Brewer. Catherine Brown.
Here.
Catherine is here. Okay. Deb, are you there? Deb Brewer?
Deb just texted me, and this is Julia, and said that something's not going right for her to dial in. Or for her to...
All right. Let me resend it to her then.
Okay. Yeah, she just texted.
Okay. All right. And we had Barb DeSimone.
Here.
Alyssa Cummings. Did she come in?
She's not able to make it today.
Okay. Erica Grande. Sarah Harvey. Wayne Lynch.
Present.
Bob McEwen.
Here.
Dennis Michaels.
Here.
Brian Michelle.
Here.
Julia is on. Dr. Pilek Lemia. Jim Trimboli.
Here.
Lydia is on.
Yes.
Brad Winger.
Here.
Okay. Dr. Morbido. Okay, I think I'm going to have to email.
Well, I can begin the first part of the meeting without him and move it along. I don't think there's anything he's going to miss on what I have to say on consent agenda, information items, or chairperson's report. In other words, at this particular time, I want to bring out the fact that any of the public attendees, if you have any questions, you can contact our Director of Public Relations, Barbara DeSimone, and she'll try to get your answer for you. That's for our public attendees today. Also, exactly 5 to 12, we did have three F-35s fly over. You probably caught that, and I tanker K-135. The K-135 was from our base here, 914th. The three F-35s came from the Vermont National Guard. Their base is up near Burlington, Vermont. And certainly it was a salute to our frontline defense, doctors, our nurses, our EMTs, everybody that is serving our COVID-19 patients, and also our mobilized armed forces personnel that have done a real good job. Our salute and our prayer to them when they return to their family, because on their shifts, they're under duress, and certainly they're under pressures when they go home. So as I said and repeat again, I'm sure you're with me, our prayers are with them. God bless them all. Now, on the presentation today, we have the Bonato group, the audit report. Craig, are you there?
I sure am.
Well, good. you and the family, well, you sound very healthy. How's the family?
Very fine, thank you.
Okay, great. Go ahead, you're on, and if people have any questions, certainly you'll attempt to answer them for them. Go ahead, Craig.
All right, thanks a lot. Everybody should have, the booklet. I'm assuming everyone has a package of our presentation, either hard copy wherever you may be or on your laptop. And what I'd like to do today is similar to previous years. I'll go through the presentation, the initial presentation is 7-8 pages of material, not concentrating on the actual financial statements, that they should be accompanying your packet as well. As you know, they're about 65 pages long. We're not going to go through that in detail, but I do want to hopefully give everybody a synopsis, a summary of the audit process. And once again, if you have any questions, please feel free to ask between either me or Patrice. We can get your questions answered today. Once again, just to remind everybody, from the college's perspective, the audit of the college continues to go very well. We could have been presenting the results of the audit process back in early February once we get all the information related to the retirement system. But once again, the delay typically comes about because of the getting all of the information from the component units. And we just did get the village's final issued financial statements a couple weeks ago. So once again, we need all that information to issue the college's financials. So that delay is consistent with previous years. I just don't want anyone to think it's due to any delays on the college's part. So if you turn to page one of that initial presentation package, the page called Executive Summary, just to summarize the results of the audit report that we'll issue on the college's financial statements, including all the component units, the discreetly presented component units, will be an unmodified or clean opinion. And keep in mind, just to remind everybody, we do not audit the component units. That is done by another firm. A couple of other key items, no material weaknesses, internal control. Similar to previous years, the controls continue to operate very effectively during fiscal 2019. I keep saying 2019, we're in May of 20, but keep in mind we're going back to 19. No audit adjustments as well. The books and records were in great shape. And probably one of the more important things, you look at the bottom box there with respect to your single audit, the use of your federal funds. You do receive about $17.3 million of federal funds for the year ended August of 19, 16.3, almost substantially all of which are student financial aid. And our testing of the college's use of those funds identified no findings. So once again, all positive reports with respect to the reports we will be issuing on behalf of the college.
Bill's on the phone.
Welcome.
I got kicked off for some reason. And then when I got on, it kept saying the meeting hadn't started.
Well, they cut the lines in Saratoga, huh?
Yeah, I must have been.
Welcome in. Craig is making this presentation.
Yeah, Bill, we're on page two of the presentation package. Okay, the information on pages 2, 3, and 4 are pretty consistent with what you've seen before in previous years. I'm not going to go through all that in great detail. A couple of the key items on page 2, about halfway down, talks about new accounting pronouncements. No new accounting pronouncements in the financial statements this year. You weren't required as an institution to adopt any new standards. So when you look at the actual statements, if you had the chance and the opportunity to do that, it should look pretty similar to last year's statements. There's nothing new in there. Once again, at the bottom of page 2, just a reminder about the level and the magnitude of the accounting estimates in the financial statements of the college. There are some significant estimates. And if you turn to page 3, you're going to see 3 bulleted items on the top of page 3. The first item is quite rather immaterial in comparison to the others, but there is a reserve for uncollectible receivables. But the two big items are with respect to the college recording its share of the post-employment health care benefits, the OPEB, which is significant. At the end of 2019, the college had reported a liability of $158 million. We've talked about this for a couple of years now. It's been effective, the accounting, in a manner that you're now required to utilize for a couple of years. So you have a liability on your books for $158 million, which represents the future outlay of post-employment benefits to your employees. So that's, again, has a significant impact on your financial statements, and you'll see that a little bit later. No real impact on a cash basis. That's very similar. You fund it as you need on an ongoing basis, as people might say, a pay-as-you-go approach, but you do have a significant liability. You also have a liability related to the net pension liability and a net pension asset related to your participation in both the TRS and ERS plans that are provided by the state. So those are some significant liabilities and assets that are actuarially determined through the use of estimates on your financial statements. Any questions on those? We're going to touch upon them a little bit later when you see the effect on your financials, but if there's any questions now, I would take those as well. Okay, moving on. What I mentioned earlier, no really difficulties encountered performing the audit. Patrice and her staff did a great job with respect to preparation and providing the information we need for the audit process. As I mentioned, no audit adjustments. So those are the real key items on pages two, three, and four that I want to touch upon as far as, I'll say, the sort of the global aspects of the audit process. If there's no other questions, what I'd like to do is turn to page five, and really this is a sort of a summary of your statement of net position or your balance sheet. You may want to call it that way in a different form. But looking at your assets and liabilities, if you look at page five, if you start at the top, and there's a comparison, obviously a summarized comparison between 18 and 19. Your current assets, you can see about $27 million at the end of 19, about $29.8 million at the end of 18. That is primarily all cash and receivables. At the end of the year, there was $21 million of cash and $6 million of receivables. And the big decrease really was because your receivables are going down primarily because of declining enrollment. We're going to talk about a little bit later something that obviously everyone's familiar with, issues facing community colleges all across the upstate region. I mean, I don't think there's any community colleges that are experiencing increasing enrollment. Your capital assets, very consistent. In 2018, there's a significant increase in your assets as the Learning Commons was going online. But your capital assets were very consistent this year. The adds really were offset by the depreciation charge. Another asset I don't want to spend a lot of time on, but the deferred outflows is an accounting concept of costs that will be basically net position will be utilized in the future related to those costs. And the reason that increased about $10 million was, once again, it's related to your post-employment benefits and the increase in the discount rate. So just once again, that's not a hard asset. That's not cash or any type of anything you have access to. It's an asset. It's not really an asset. It's what's called a deferred outflow. It's based on the actual calculations of the post-employment benefit liability. And then when you look at your current liabilities, once again, the item that it's really sticks out on your balance sheet or your statement of net position is those post-employment benefits. And you can see at the end of 2019, $158 million. At the end of last year, only $139 million. So it did go up, as you can see, $18 million from year to year. And the reason it went up was the fact that the discount rate, interest rates continue to fall. So the discount rate continues to fall from year to year. So it was a 1% change in the discount rate. So it went down from, I think it was about 3.3 and change to 2 and change. So that 1%, when you're looking at liabilities this large, it has a significant impact. So as the rates fall, it's going to cost the college that much more to satisfy those liabilities down the road. At the same time, the service costs related to those benefits increased substantially in 2019, or those costs that were earned actually in 19 went up as well based on the actual determinations of a number of different factors that go into that calculation. So overall, you can see the effect that has on your balance sheet. When you look down at your net position, you have unrestricted net position of a minus $132 million, primarily because of the effect of those post-employment benefits. If you took that, if you took those post-employment benefits out, you would obviously have a positive of what's that, $26 million. Now, keep in mind, absent one other community college in New York State, everybody does provide post-employment benefits to their employees upon retirement. The difference between Niagara and some of the other schools, your sister colleges, is your benefits are once again, just a little bit more generous than others. So the magnitude of the liability is significantly more than other schools. So I say that when you compare other schools, a lot of the metrics that people use in Albany to look at and compare schools, because of this liability, you've been adversely affected on paper when you compare yourself to others. Keep in mind that you're still, that's not affecting your cash outlay. You still fund the liability as you go, as those benefits become eligible to be received by your employee, the retired employee. So that's not affecting that, but it does look fairly, quote unquote, ugly on your balance sheet. Does anyone have any questions about that? That is a significant item when you look at your statement of net position. We've talked about it before, but once again, it increased substantially this year.
Question is for Craig.
This is Kevin Clark here.
Yes.
You may not know, this might be human resources question, but the you know, the benefits, obviously, in addition to pension, is health care. Is that health care transferable to the spouse if the actual employee is deceased?
Patrice or John?
Yeah. Yeah. Catherine Brown. Yes, it is. And Catherine?
Oh, yeah.
HR.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello? Yeah, you're coming up through clear, Catherine.
Sorry. Yes, it is transferable to the spouse upon the death of the employee.
Thank you.
The benefit is not lost.
Any other questions for Craig?
Okay, well, if no more on that page, just to briefly, if we turn to page 6, once again, I think it's important when you look at the when you look at the financial statements and the effect that the post-employment benefits has on your financials, but sometimes a much better way to look at the operations of a college, especially the community colleges in upstate New York or anybody who has these significant liabilities related to post-employment, is to look at your unrestricted funds when you look at your core operations. And that's what we're attempting to do on page 6. And what this is doing is taking the information really as you report it, as it says on the top of the page, as you report to SUNY on what's called the annual report. And when you look at just your unrestricted funds, you did have a fund balance of $14 million at the beginning of the year. And then you're, from an operating basis, you can see that during the year you had $44.6 million of operating revenues offset by $45.2 million of operating expenses. So overall, you were basically on a budget, operating budget of $45 million, a decrease in your net assets of, or fund balance of only $600,000 compared to $900,000 last year. So when you look at all of the changes that are going through, your core operations are actually relatively stable. You can see your revenue did go down. Once again, I mentioned earlier, tuition and fees were down, enrollment's down a little bit. Your rates did go up to offset that. Some of your other items are fairly consistent during the year. So at the end of the year, you can see your unrestricted fund balance, as reported to New York State, the SUNY system, was $13.8 million. When you look at it from an operating basis or unrestricted fund basis, you are actually fairly high on when you compare yourselves to other institutions in the state. There's always a question of what's an adequate level of fund balance to be maintained on an annual basis. When you look at yours at $13.8 million, as I said, you're on the higher end, and that's about anywhere from 20 to 25% of your total operating expenses, however you may want to define them, whether you include your expenses related to post-employment benefits that you have on a cash outlay, et cetera. But you're actually fairly healthy when you look at your fund balance position. And then when you take into account, just as this reconciliation continues on down, you can see the effect of your post-employment benefits as well as participation in the pension plans get you back to that unrestricted net position, $132 million deficit that we saw on the previous page. So from an operating perspective, you're actually your fund balance position is fairly secure and fairly solid in connection in relationship to your peers, as well as what the any type of organization that may evaluate financial health. You're fairly healthy in that respect. So I think that's a big positive when you look at Niagara County Community College. Any questions about that? If not, pages 7 and 8, I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, in interest of time. It's basically just a roll forward of the pension obligations related to the retirement plans, as well as your post-employment benefit. And we have already talked about those. The effect of the pension plans, the retirement plans, nowhere near as significant effect on your financials as you see on page 8 when you look at your post-employment benefits, which we've already discussed, about that $18 million. So I guess in summary, the audit process for the college went really well. We are ready to issue the financial statements. As I said, we do have all the component unit information. And pending your approval today, we'll be ready to issue these later this week.
This is Bill. Brought to my attention on Kevin's question about the survivor and the health retiree plan. If the employee dies, the spouse remains on the plan but must pay 100% of the cost.
This is Patrice, and that is correct.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
Thank you.
That made it clear.
Anything else?
Any other questions for Craig Stevens from Monado? Guess we're all set, Craig.
All right. Well, I thank everybody for their time, and I will be talking to Patrice later this week, and we'll get these financial statements issued.
Hey, Craig, stay healthy, drive safely.
All right. Thank you. You too, everybody. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Craig.
Bye-bye.
Folks, we're going to move on to the consent agenda. Our board meeting minutes of April 21st, 2020, the statement of revenues and expenditures, and two items under grant activities. And on the board meeting minutes, April 21st, take a minute to look at them. Make sure that there are no additions or deletions. Take a look at your grant activities, too. Those two are extremely important there, especially the first one. Okay, if there are no additions or deletions, I need a motion.
I so move, Kevin Clark.
Kevin Clark made the motion. I'm looking for a second.
Second, Eric Lips.
Eric Lips made the second. Now, it was like a roll call vote, Barbara.
Just leave. Good. Just leave.
Chairperson Ross.
Yes.
I'm not sure if Jason Caffarella has come on yet. Gina Virtuoso.
Yes.
Bonnie Spoma.
Yes.
Kevin Clark.
Yes.
Jerry Wolfgang.
Yes.
And Eric Lips.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much. That completes the consent agenda. The information items. We have the grant tracking chart. It takes you right from September 1st, 2019, right up to the present time. Of course, the personnel status chart, as you saw in the personnel status chart, we've had two retirements. And congratulations to those people. May they have a long and healthy retirement. The foundation report, Debbie, I don't know whether you're on or you're not on. I know they were making donations. I just wanted you to make a few comments on that, if you're on.
I am on. And
great.
Yes, people have been very generous. Appreciate it. We've had the emergency relief fund for the students. And I'm on a call tomorrow, a SUNY call. There's an organization, foundation, that will match up to $50,000 of donations that we receive. So hopefully we'll ramp up what we're receiving for donations. We need probably about $35,000 more to reach that, but we have till June 30th, and I'll have more information tomorrow.
Well, very, very good. Well, thank you. Facilities update. And Wayne, maybe you can update the people on testing site on lot number one. It's very interesting. I know they're using some of our facilities in H building as headquarters and things like that. Maybe you can give us just an update on that and a review for the people that have not been out there.
Sure. The state's been here a little over 2 weeks now. We've basically turned over the, you know, the bulk of the front of our campus. They've been extremely good neighbors. We've set them up with complete control of lot one. We've also given them a command center directly adjacent inside the building to lot one, utilizing our large gym and one of our classrooms. This provides them a base of operations and also gives them the ability to do some office work outside of the inclement weather that we've had out there. From what I've been in conversation with, they're averaging somewhere around 50 as far as up to 100 cars a day coming through the site. And we have not had any, there's not one negative comment to make about that operation that's been on our campus. I think it's actually been really a positive for Niagara County Community College to have an operation ongoing on campus like that. It's almost like it's good for the community. It's also good for our profile in the community.
Yeah, I had a conversation with our director of health of the county, Dan Stapleton. He appreciates the cooperation. He says not only from you and your staff there that you have there, but also he did say the state worked very well. They did a great job out there, and it's a testing site. Naturally, you have to call in to get an appointment. But we're one of the first, if not the first, in Niagara County before they set up some others in Niagara Falls and maybe some in Lockport. I'm not sure about that. But again, congratulations for the support you gave to this very important testing site. And I'm glad we've been able to cooperate so very closely with the state and the county on this testing site in lot number one. Is there anything else that you'd like to update us on? I know we've saved some money on power.
We've done a good job at mothballing as much equipment and energy savings as possible. You'll see in the report we cut almost $9,000 out of last month's utility bill for essentially just being good stewards of the organization's resources. Our reopening committee will have our third meeting tomorrow, which will just about conclude the data collection phase with our anticipation to open up labs for summer session two, and we're targeting what constraints will be in place for laboratories to be conducted on campus for fall. Those are our two driving missions right now. The only other piece I would offer is Niagara County was also generous to deliver 20 gallons of hand sanitizer to us, 300 bottles of pocket sanitizer and cloth masks. So we've really been working in partnership with our county sponsor this whole time. So any questions on that?
Congratulations. Like I said, Dan Stapleton said you've done a great job. So very, very proud of that for our cooperation. And moving on, the only other thing we had under information items, of course, was an RFP for employee benefits brokerage and consulting services that was issued just recently, I believe. Now, moving off information items and moving to chairperson's report, well, you know, our calendar year is coming to an end for the Board of Trustees. June 30th is our last meeting. And according to our bylaws in May, any member, Board of Trustee member, can submit a slate of officers. And you know what our officers are, chairperson, vice chairperson, mm-hmm. financial secretary, and secretary. And I like to just add that I've enjoyed my last 2 years, matter of fact, 2.5 years, because the last chairperson had to resign, and so I picked up a half year of his. I really appreciate the cooperation not only of my colleagues on the Board of Trustees, but certainly on our NCCC family, our administrators, our faculty. It's been very good for me, very enjoyable for me, but it's good to move the leadership around. I'm glad our bylaws say no more than two consecutive terms. So we are looking for slate of officers. Under new business today, you can submit a slate, or just prior to our vote on June 30th, which is our next regular scheduled meeting, you or any member, any trustee member can put in a slate at that time. But this is very, very important. These are going to be very difficult days and difficult situations, make for difficult decisions, as we well know. But I know that trustees will pick a slate, and any slate will do a good job for us. I think we have some outstanding talent on this Board of Trustees. Just want to bring that up. Another thing, too, the New York State Community College Trustees Association is working their Government Relations Committee and, you know, getting out the word. We are a member and have been a member for a good many years, and they've doing a lot of things that we've already done, letters to our state legislators, letters to our national elected officials, certainly about aid and not cutting aid and things like that. So we followed their format. But on Saturday, May 30th, they're going to have a Zoom meeting. I believe that might be in the morning. And I've asked Trustee Gina Virtuoso to attend that Zoom meeting. I can't Zoom from my kitchen table here. I'm still on the flip phone. And but I do want representation from our Board of Trustees, and Gina kindly has consented to be our representative at this Zoom meeting with the NYCCT people there. It should be a good meeting. I think the people that are in those committees are trying to do the best job they can in support of our 30 community colleges. Just one other item, too, before I turn everything over to the president, because he has a lot of important things here. You are also given the budget calendar, a copy of it, and of course, this will be important on June 8th. You have it probably in front of you, but that's where our administration, our CC committee, community service, which our college comes under, is calling for a public hearing. And then at the legislative meeting, if all goes well, on June 16th, the legislative meeting, a resolution will be passed calling for a public hearing. And that goes right down to July 27th. That's when they're going to listen to our budgets, our proposed budgets. And that will be forwarded to the legislative meeting on August 4th. There'll be a public hearing at 7 o'clock. And later on in the meeting, there'll be a vote to adopt our 2021 budget. So that budget calendar is awfully important. Can there be changes to it? There's a possibility. And if there is changes, certainly we'll get that information to you. Now, at this time, I'm going to turn it over to the president, Dr. Morabito. I know you have a lot of points to cover.
Okay. Thank you very much, Bill. Hang on. I'm looking for my pages here. Okay. This is a no... they're not in priority order. It's just I want to congratulate Madison and Denise, who produced three podcasts helping the students. One is making the grade, other one is staying safe and healthy, and the other one is preparing for the finals. We're going to send those podcasts to you. They're great examples of how the staff have developed support services for the students, and take a chance and please review those. They're very interesting. We were notified this week about changes in Title IX from the federal government. Most colleges are not happy with these. SUNY's not happy. They're suppose pulling back a little bit in terms of support for alleged victims. But there are a series of webinars, one from Joe Storch, who's SUNY's guru in this area, and we'll participate in that fully. And wherever changes are necessary in our Title IX policy, we will move those to the board. I was wondering if Catherine had anything to say on this.
Bill, can I ask a question on that?
Yes.
This is Gina. Can I? Okay, so I did see that that the federal government is pulling back. I think it's a terrible resolution, however they did it. But does the state, can the state supersede that, where it says coaches now do not have to report sexual harassment? Am I right on that? And can this, can we still report it to the state? I guess that's a question for Catherine.
Yeah,
good question.
I'm pretty sure we cannot supersede that. If we're not consistent with the federal money, we will lose Title IV funds.
Title IV.
Go ahead, Catherine.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that is correct. We have to follow the guidelines, because if that exactly right is, we could jeopardize our Title IV funding under financial aid. Julie and I are registered for a couple webinars, and we'll continue to follow it. Hopefully, you know, they'll reverse these new guidelines. But as of right now, I know that they've, you know, been vocal, SUNY, and some other schools as well. But as of right now, you know, these guidelines stand, unfortunately.
What are they saying exactly? All the report that I read was that coaches don't have to report sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Everybody's a mandatory reporter, so if they became aware of a situation, they wouldn't, you know, have that mandatory reporter obligation.
But they still can report it.
They still can report it.
Okay, but they're not obligated anymore.
They're not obligated. Yeah, they would not be subject to, you know, measures under our policies, right? Right. Measures under our policies of discipline for not reporting it. And I anticipate the Title IX training that we do annually will also be changed if these guidelines continue to stand. So that's typically sent out late August, September to our campus. So those changes will be also be incorporated if, you know, the guidelines do not change back, okay, you know, or something different.
Yes. Thank you. I appreciate the explanation. Thank you.
Okay. It's interesting.
In the end, the federal government feels that they're rebalancing the equation and putting more support for the accused to equal so they're protected. That we have to wait and see how that plays out. Okay, third item, class gift. As we reported before, the class of 2020 had developed a plan to have produced and distribute 18,000 cookies to the first responders, healthcare workers, and such around the county. 6,000 of them have received three cookies that were designed by the campus with a thank you message from the class of 2020. In the end, these were produced by TOPS and product, their vendors provided product. They liked the project so much, they agreed not to charge us. So that was wonderful. That was really a nice gesture. A thank you to the sheriff who organized the distribution of all these cookies, and they were well received by all of the hospitals and police stations and such. So the class of 2020 now is using those same funds to strengthen the as a class gift, the emergency loan fund, to purchase masks for some students or PPE equipment, and to support food banks. So here again, that money's gone a long way. So thank you, class of 2020.
Very good.
In the housing, we did pull the resolution that was going to ask the board to support our request to the county to have the college as a guarantor for the housing village. And we were informed by the county that they were not going to support our resolution. So we pulled that, and we can discuss this further in terms of options in executive session, because it has important ramifications. We did send letters to the unions and to individual administrators identifying our budget situation and requesting from the unions an opportunity for them to suggest ways to reduce costs. We'll be discussing more in terms of our options under this category. The opening day committee, Wayne described that. This is an important group. It's across from every area of the college. We're waiting. I know the governor just opened up the Mohawk Valley area, and just north of here, or actually, yeah, north of here, the Montgomery area has been opened. So they can now go into phases. Education, unfortunately, is in phase four. If Niagara or Western New York would be Erie, Niagara, and Cattaraugus, if that group meets all of the seven guidelines, then we can reopen. But we're waiting to have that meet those first guidelines and then move to phase four. The opening day committee is looking at all of the options in terms of creating a healthy and safe environment for our students. Opening day selected. I was selected by the chamber to be on their opening day or opening committee. This group is meeting with Lieutenant Governor this afternoon, so I'll be on that call. In meeting with the presidents, you know, I'm meeting with various groups of presidents, one with all of the SUNY presidents. We meet twice a week with the chancellor's call. We meet once a week as community college presidents on Friday afternoon. We meet once a week with the area community college presidents, the six campuses in Western New York. And we also meet with all of the public and private presidents in Western New York. So everyone's sharing information and strategies and such. So this has been very, very helpful. But in the discussion with the community college president, it's quite clear that there's angst regarding what is going to happen about the future of community colleges. So various groups are looking at various models to discuss ways of strengthening the current system or changing the current system in terms of regionalizing or collaborations, what have you. So that's more to be had, and the community college trustees will play an important role in this. As Bill, the NYSE call, we'll probably have this as an important agenda item.
Yes.
Okay, and the CARES Act, as you know, we're receiving approximately $3.5 million. Half of that will be distributed to students directly. The attempt is to get money in the hands of students so it would boost the economy. The second half, which we don't have guidelines and yet, but that will be used for institutional costs, and that's an important part. We're publishing weekly updates under my name, which keeping the students and the faculty and staff and the public really up to date on what's happening with the campus. And I hope you have an opportunity to review those. So we were looking in terms of commencement. We were scheduled to have commencement this coming Saturday, but what's going to happen is that that has been postponed. On May 23rd, we're producing a celebration for the class of 2020. It's not considered a commencement, but it's a celebrating the graduates. And we've had a lot of information online. Hopefully you've reviewed that. Our intent is to have the celebration. We will be delivering diplomas, obviously, for all the students who've met graduation requirements. Then in the fall, we're going to try to have a face-to-face ceremony. But if we're not able to do that, if we're not able to assemble or whatever happens, then all the graduates would be invited to participate face-to-face in our May 21 celebration. I'm trying to read my writing. Oh, okay. We've had a special problem with welding. We've had a group of 7 or 8 students who have not had hands-on experience to qualify for certification. So we've finally come to a resolution between Lydia and Wade. We're going to create a welding setup in what is called our salt barn. And we'll be bringing in welding machines to give these students an opportunity to have the hands-on experience to qualify for certification. At the same time, I've been working with Clark Gottschall, because he has the same problem with some of his BOCES students. And we've agreed to open this up to him to allow those students to get their hands-on experience. So it was well received by Clark. I met with some architects at the Rainbow, what was the Rainbow
Mall
expansion? Mall, okay. And we looked at the space, and there's consideration of expanding that, and we were looking at moving some things there, beverage, horticulture, maybe a massage, and we're looking at the space, and that project is continuing to be discussed. The enrollment planning, we'll talk more about this in the budget, but we're expecting a decrease, as most campuses, the presidents are reporting. And we're planning for anywhere from between the 10 and 25% decrease. And this is going to have a special impact on our student budgets, because they're going to have to, they'll have less funds, and they'll have to adjust their programming, both in student activities, student government, and athletics. Truth or Consequences was the group that SUNY contracted with to do an assessment and trying to create a new SUNY brand. Our campus was identified as one of the 16 campuses that would participate in providing information and such. I did meet with their principal and talked for, I don't know, half an hour or so. And they will follow up with a meeting with some of our students and some of our staff. Okay, that's all. I'm open for any questions you might have.
Questions for Dr. Morabito. This is Kevin Clark, doctor.
Yes.
I don't know if this is the appropriate time, but I think, you know, I'm still involved in the high school education, and I had the opportunity to talk to a dean from the University of Pittsburgh this last weekend. And, you know, there really is quite a push for community college attendance, because quite a few of the students who have made preliminary plans to attend four-year institutions are rethinking that. And this has all happened within the last 2 months. And I think there is a possibility out there, at least in my small area of expertise here, that possibly you could see a bump in attendance to community college attendance, which obviously 2 months ago was not in the realm. And it may not materialize, but I think the possibility is there that junior colleges actually could benefit from this unfortunate situation.
Well, I agree with you entirely. If you read some of the research releases recently, about a third of the students, high school graduates, have identified a concern about joining a college this fall, oftentimes moving to a residential situation. And so most community colleges, and we are also planning to do a promotion around stay healthy, stay at home, and using not to have a gap year, but to use this year to gain credit, then move on as things come into place the following year. Bob and Julia, we talked this morning, and Bob's is going to produce a timetable about all the things we're going to be doing to in enrollment between now and enrollment enrollment in the fall. And we're going to tie that to our PR program to show how the PR is going to support all those activities. And we'll be sharing that with the board.
Thank you, Doctor.
Okay. Any other questions for Dr. Morbido? Okay, thanks, Dr. Morbido. Brought up a lot of good points. And I like, Kevin, I like that last point of yours, because I read a couple articles on kids that are thinking community colleges, and that certainly could be a benefit to us. Student trustee report. Eric, you had a great report here. Why don't you pick it up and go over the highlights?
Okay, I'll try to keep it quick.
Okay.
All right. They've had a lot of success with Make It Monday, with well over 100 students attending each time. Also a lot of success with the Whip It Up Wednesdays, which is a live cooking demo by a culinary student. And all three of those showed success of well over 100 students as well. They also offer Fit Fridays. The one had 734 attending. The campus pantry remains open for all students for online. They have about 50 students utilizing it, with 500 items having been given out and over $2,000 having been raised. Student housing said that they will begin move outs on May 4th and will continue on through Saturday. They will have certain time slots for each student to sign up for. They've been unable to reach 28 students in regard to their belongings, but they will continue to try to lower that amount. This remains 17 residents living in the housing and will be able to move out by the 16th. Rich from Dining Services still able to supply meals. Jill actually sent me a quote in her email saying that doesn't seem like a lot, but it's hectic. Amanda Hasley said athletics' primary goal was to stay connected to the student athletes, so they're doing weekly team Zoom meetings where the coaches can actually see their athletes and kind of check in on them. They've been doing other contests such as Guess the Baby and Coach's Corner. They said that we've been offering weekly virtual exercise classes that have participation between 15 and 25 students. And her quote to my in my email was, "We will all get through this together." A couple things. I actually took the time to do the ACCT Road to Recovery webinar, and I thought it was really useful. I wanted to ask what the board or what the president thought. I thought there was a lot of good websites and resources for the students from Single Stop, EdEquity, EdAmerica. And I didn't know if there was like a verification process or something that you have to like scrutinize these websites before shipping them off to the students for, you know, as a resource.
So this is Bill. I can talk about this. I must get 50 solicitations a day from corporate America with solicitations regarding this service or that service, that website, and such. So I do send those on to people who are involved in the particular area. Oftentimes, I would say 75% of them are promotional, where you buy this service or they offer a grant. So when you buy the grant, you only can get the grant if you buy the service, and the prices go up in the fall. So we're very careful to make sure we're touching base with the right ones. But I would say that some of them are very useful. Some of them are people participate in that, and we will share those appropriately.
Okay. Well, I guess that kind of brings me to the end of it. After, you know, listening to the webinar, it kind of brought up a couple questions that, you know, I don't even know who to specifically ask for, but it pertained to me as a student. That was distant learning happened in quick response to the COVID-19 outbreak. So three things with that. What's actually being learned through the distant procedures? Are we going to make sure that the students remain immersed in the classroom like they would be if this has to continue on in the fall? And then if we are going to be on distant learning, you know, what can we do to course align like they were in school, not just presenting material, hoping that they read it, and then maybe taking a test or something.
Dr. Morabito?
So all of those are excellent points. In terms of determining what is learned, we look to the professors who are teaching these courses to do an appropriate assessment. They're still responsible for doing student learning outcomes and reporting that in. Many of them were under the gun during our break in spring to come up with the courses they're going to teach online. We've done a lot of support through Lisa's office and Lydia's office to support the faculty in that. And Frankie with Gail Tylik has done a lot. So we're going to continue to create those support networks so our faculty will be able to produce we've been buying simulation. We're doing a lot, video graphing. And I know many of our faculty are preparing to for the fall to either have face-to-face or be able to transition to an online course. So it's we're looking at all the support networks so we have the best product possible.
Okay, that's great. And I think my final thing that I haven't had an issue with, but I also haven't had to contact because I'm graduating, but they brought up there was a survey about 40% of students said that they were not receiving phone calls. They were dropped phone calls, that no return phone calls. I don't know the particulars about this school per se. I know you were there in the student government meeting, and you know, a few of them said that they had this problem and a couple had said that they didn't. So I don't know if this is something that we can try to address, maybe if there's already been a survey or send a survey out about students trying to enroll or currently enrolled, if they're having any problems with cashier's office, financial aid, or enrollment personnel.
So for most of our students, new students and continuing students, we're actually doing a case management process where they're getting calls themselves. If a person calls and they're not able to get in, that's bad. And we need to know about it. And we try to prevent every one of those. I know some students have said they can't get a hold of their faculty member, and that's a no-no. So, but most of our faculty members have been very conscientious to get back through Blackboard or emails or phone calls. So we're learning a lot through this whole process.
Okay. Well, thank you. Sorry, my report turned into more of like a Q&A.
No, that's good.
Eric.
I'm glad I had a few answers. I don't know.
Eric, those were good questions. What this Board of Trustees would like to do is congratulate you on your upcoming graduation on May 16th. I want to say this, and I'm sure this would be echoed by all our colleagues on the Board of Trustees and our administrators that have been attending meetings and realize the kind of job you've done, complete coverage. And I think you serviced your fellow students extremely well. You had a good tenure as a student trustee. I certainly want to congratulate you on that. And I'm sure as you move on from community college, you'll keep us in mind and be a true alumni, because I think you've got a lot of interest in community college. Certainly, your roots run deep. And again, from this Board of Trustees, I want to thank you for your service as a trustee. I think you did a tremendous job. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
Bill, can I ask Julia, are you on the phone?
I'm here.
Julia?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, I didn't say anything about the chancellor's scholarships. Are we allowed to say anything at this point?
I have not been given permission by the chancellor to announce anything because she has not formally done an announcement. I think it's supposed to be coming
this week. Then we'll just keep everyone up to date once we have that release. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to move on to the Faculty Observer, and that's Julie. And Julie, can I congratulate you on your reelection to president? As long as I read this report, congratulations again.
Thank you very much.
Julie?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Try again. I got old ears here. Maybe everybody else is hearing you clear. Can you hear Julie?
Okay. Thank you.
There, you're coming in.
Okay. So my report is in your packet. I did list some of events that I had to exactly have elections, and I did have reacted to see.
I'm not hearing Julie.
You're cutting out on us, Julie, a bit. For whatever reason. I don't know.
All right. So, you hear talk about electronic.
Still cutting out. Yeah. Could try again.
The power of. Is it better?
No, still difficult to hear. Keeps breaking up.
Yeah, breaking up. I get a word and then I get another word and things like that. And try again.
Try that.
Yeah. No, you're Julie, you're still with us. You know, we might have to go back to Julie, and maybe it'll be cleared up at that particular time. But we're just getting one word and then a skip word and then another word. And it's at least I'm having a hard time understanding. What about the rest of you folks?
No, we can't. Does Dennis have any suggestions?
Yeah. I would think, President Morbido, if Dennis could work on it, we could go on to executive session. And certainly if we cleared it up after we came out of executive session, we could have the report by Julie and then go into the rest of our business that we have to take care of today.
Perfect.
I think that might be the best way to do it. We'll let Dennis work on that to try to clear it up. And you notice I mentioned executive session. We're calling an executive session for personnel, and on the executive session, as you know, it's Section 105 of the Article 7 of the Public Officers Law, and certainly I need a motion to go in, I need a second, and then I need a roll call vote, so to go into executive session. Could I have a motion, please?
Motion, Jerry.
Jason Caparella. Second, Jason Caparella.
We have a motion on the floor. Do we have a second?
Second, Jason Caparella.
Okay, thank you. It was clear. Now, Barbara, I'd like a roll call vote to go into executive session. Barbara? I think we lost Barbara.
No, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah. I just need a roll call vote. I have a motion on the floor. I have a second.
Okay. Chairperson Ross.
Yes.
Jason Caparella.
Yes.
He made the second. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Bonnie Sloma.
Yes.
Has Katie Alexander joined? Okay, Kevin Clark.
Yes.
Has Sheila Smith joined? And we did get Jerry was on the first, and Eric Lips.
Yes.
Okay, we're all set then. Okay, thank you very much, President Morabito. We're in executive session on personnel.
No, wait.
Wait, okay.
We have to, in terms of technology, if Dennis can explain what's going to happen.
Thank you. Okay. So I am going to exit you guys out of the main room. You'll hear a recording saying that you've been invited to join a breakout room. The board will automatically get moved into a breakout room that'll be private. Those that are attending will not be able to hear executive session. It will not be recorded and it will not be streamed. Everyone that I identified via the phone number that was provided by Barb Walk will be automatically pushed into the room. Barb Walk will then tell me if you guys want somebody invited to the room, and then I will move them into the room. At the end of executive session, I will be notified, and I will close the breakout room, and you'll hear an audio recording saying that the breakout room is ended, will be ending in 15 seconds, and then you will be automatically pushed back into the boardroom. I will be standing by for technical need, and Barb Walk will be able to get in touch with me if there's any questions or comments.
So individuals...
I'm not sure if you can hear me now. Sorry to interrupt.
Well, that's good. So those individuals who are not in the executive session should stay on the line or call back in?
They could stay on the line, and then when the board returns, they will automatically be in the room.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, this is Barb, Chairperson Ross. I think I heard Julie Woodworth is much clearer now. Do you want to continue with her report, or since we already went into executive session,
We're into executive session. When we come out of executive session, Julie will give a report then.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Rather than backtrack. Go ahead, President Morabito. I think we're all set.
No, we're not yet.
Okay. Not cleared yet. Okay.
Should I move everybody in now?
Yes.
Okay, just give me 1 second, and here it goes.
Yeah, I'll let we all still here?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, just give everyone a couple seconds to rejoin. Everyone is rejoining the main room right now.
Are we all set, Dennis?
You might want to do a quick roll call in about 10 to 15 seconds.
Okay. You heard it, Barbara. 15 seconds. Another roll call. think we had the 15 seconds.
Yeah, Barb, you there?
Barb. Hello, Barb. Barbara? I need a roll call. Barbara.
I don't see her. She just joined the meeting right now. Barb, are you there?
Barbara, are you there? Yeah, we need a quick roll call. I got to move this along.
Okay, I was on mute.
Yeah, no problem.
Chairperson Ross.
Here.
Gina Virtuoso.
Here.
Bonnie Sloma.
Here.
Katie Alexander.
Here.
Kevin Clark.
Here.
Jerry Wolfgang.
Here.
Eric Lipp.
Here.
And Dr. Morbido is on too.
Here.
Okay, very good. You can proceed.
We all set? Okay, Julie, I'd be Faculty Observer Report. Julie, are you with us?
Hi there. I hope you can hear me
back. Hey, glad to bring you back. You're nice and clear.
Good. All right. So my report is that for our last meeting, I went through the activities of which the president completes. That's in your packet of paperwork.
I got it right here.
And then you're right. We had elections, and many of our incumbents were reelected. So you saw.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Then we had under new business, we did accept a modification to our SU policy due to the COVID issue, and we did increase the credits allowable for the SU option to 16 out of 16 total. They could opt 8 as an SU because of the pandemic. Because of that, it affected the honors, the academic honors policy. So we then amended that to showcase that the SU could still have a student be considered for honors. We felt that that was important. So those two motions came through Senate and were approved, and those align with what the college was implementing for the SU grade to be extended to the end of the semester for the spring semester, and we also did it for summer. In addition, we talked about the financial aid ramifications of the SU grade. So we're going to be consulting with our financial aid people because of those concerns, because some financial aid will not cover if there's a certain allotment of S or U grades that show up as non-earned credit in that respect. Then we did a faculty senate accommodation for Dr. Hazley, who is retiring this year, as he's been a strong representative on the faculty senate committee for years. And I gave a report on the reopening committee, which I'm a part of, with Wayne and Lydia, of course. We're working hard on that committee to get things set for fall, as well as summer session too. Then the next thing on your report talked about our different committees and what was coming through. Our Academic Center for Excellence is maintaining tutoring online, and you can see that they're doing a great job with that. We had business... we had the professional piloting license, professional piloting program came through curriculum and is going to be moving forward. And then some syllabi updates that is nothing to worry the group about here. Micro-credentials came through. We have an art history, a direct care professional, and substance abuse services provision. Micro-credentials that have now been approved, and that's going to allow people from the community to take a couple of courses, get some kind of credit for that, and that might influence them to come back to college to further their degree or get the next degree with that acceptance of those micro-credentials. Other than that, the IRC committee did push its deadline back, and they have since met, and they have approved some IRC grants that faculty be working on over the summer. And then ad hoc work, I reported that the SUNY Adjunct in Excellence Award committee was meeting and will be putting forth any finalists to Academic Affairs and the president for consideration. That'll happen in the fall. And now we're eliciting nominations for full-time faculty excellence awards, and they are listed there, the excellence in teaching, excellence in librarianship, scholarship and creative activities, professional service, faculty service, and distinguished teaching professorship. That is now open for nominations.
Yeah, I see that.
And I just wanted to let Senator the student trustee Lips was asking some questions, and I just wanted to address those things. He had mentioned about teaching online for fall, and faculty certainly recognize that face-to-face is what most students want and best supports their learning. But in this time of the pandemic, we have to be responsible to the safety of all individuals. And so that's where that reopening subcommittee is working on, making the best plan for maintaining social distancing. Many faculty joined me on a SUNY meeting with the academic program reviewers, and they came up with ideas to support student learning outcomes with the different measurements and the different tools that we have now being all electronic in that way. And faculty are starting to identify what other purchases we might need to have as part of our plan to be able to present students content in a manner that's going to be effective for learning. And this week is final exam week. So it's the final push for both students and faculty alike. We're working hard to finish strong. And that is the end of my report. I was just hoping that maybe we'd hear soon about that CARE funding. We mentioned, I think that Eric mentioned that the CARE funding we know has been received by the college for students. And I'm just looking to see if there's a process that I can direct students towards applying for that. I believe I had understood that it was going to be housed through the grant funding.
Respond to that. So we've just had our plan approved, and we're looking to, we've identified the students who are eligible through Title IV, and they will all receive individual contacts, and they will have to complete applications, and they, those applications will be reviewed. We're using a 80-20. We're distributing 80% on the first round and 20% to help with continuing students.
Okay, so students don't have to apply. They've been selected by somebody.
They still have to complete an application identifying the budget items that they were impacted with.
Okay.
But that process will move very, very quickly.
Okay.
Hey, Julie, congratulations on Nurses Week.
Thank you.
And how important, and we've seen some good articles on this, good articles in today's paper. But again, congratulations, doing a nice job. Any questions for Julie?
No.
Very good report. Now we're going to move on to our last part of our meeting here on committee action. I don't have Chairperson Sheila Rahm, but I have Vice Chair Jerry Wolfgang, and we have two items underneath that, the conferring of the degrees motion. And Jerry, I'll let you take it from there. You can seek a motion on that, and go ahead.
I would move the motion on granting the degrees that have been listed on our agenda.
We need a second for Jerry.
Second, Kevin Clark.
Now I need a roll call vote.
Chairperson Ross?
Yes.
Gina Virtuoso?
Yes.
Bonnie Sloma?
Somebody's phone is in mute. I hear a lot of noise in the back.
Yeah. Katie Alexander?
Yes.
Kevin Clark?
Yes.
And Eric Lips?
Yes. Well, congratulations to all of our graduates. Jerry, move on to number two there under the Academic Student Life Committee.
I've lost the agenda off my...
Oh, that's okay. No problem at all. I think Julia Pittman is going to have some remarks on student fee budget. Go ahead, Julie.
That's correct. Thank you. This time every year, we bring forward the student activity fee budget for your review. The student government approved their budget this past last week. They are going to be offering a student activity fee for $97 for full-time students and $49 for part-time students. That's part of the fee plan that was approved last year by the Board of Trustees. So it is part of the planned increases that you approved last year. They based their budget on a 6% enrollment decline. However, the students have been notified that in August, they will most likely need to go back and review their budget and compare it to what our enrollment numbers are looking like, because as we've spoken before, it may be more than a 6% decline. Even with a 6% decline in enrollment and with the slight increase of fees, their budget is only increasing by 3.7%, or about $20,000. In the budget presented to you as a list of items that they are proposing to fund for next year, and many of the ones in the fall semester, we are hoping we will be able to fund the fall concert, a fall family fest. We did put in a COVID contingency in our budget in case we need to change how we do activities or fund certain items based on the COVID crisis and if it's being continued through the year. You'll also see information in there about club funding and other activities that they reviewed. So this is just an opportunity to present to you and for you to accept their budget so that they can move forward. It's not necessarily an official vote because the fee was already set last year. Any questions about this year's budget?
Questions for Julie. Well, thank you very much. And we're gonna move on to the fiscal committee. I'll turn that over to Trustee Gina Virtuoso, who's a chairperson of that committee. Number one is eliminated, but I have to bring this up to you, Gina. We're going to, usually on the second resolution, we would have a second reading. But we, in order to move things along because of the time limitations, we're going to have two resolutions on this. The first resolution will be to waive the requirements for the second reading. After we pass that resolution, then you'll have a resolution to naturally to offer the personnel and benefit incentives, and I'll turn it over to you at this time. Trustee Virtuoso.
Okay, Bill, thank you. Motion to waive the second reading of the resolution.
You'll need a second.
Kevin Clark.
And now Barbara, roll call on that.
Chairperson Ross.
Yes.
Gina Virtuoso?
Bonnie, yes.
Bonnie Saloma?
Yes.
Katie Alexander?
Yes.
Kevin Clark?
Yes.
Carrie Wolfgang?
Yes.
Eric Lipp?
Yes.
Very good. That passes. Now, the second
part. Move the board. I move the board approve the resolution to offer personnel and benefit incentives as presented.
Motion on the floor.
Second, Kevin Clark.
Roll call vote.
Chairperson Ross?
Yes.
Attorney Virtuoso?
Yes.
Bonnie Saloma?
Yes.
Katie Alexander?
Yes.
Kevin Clark?
Yes.
Jerry Wolfgang?
Yes.
And Eric Lipp?
Yes.
Okay, that takes care of the fiscal committee. Thank you, Trustee Virtuoso. I don't know of any old business unless some trustee has something to bring up. Under,
Bill, this is Bill. Because that resolution wasn't widely disseminated, we will immediately have a system message, special system message that will show that resolution.
Okay, that'll be good.
All right.
Thank you.
You don't want it read now?
You want me to read it?
Yes.
You can. What you're asking, President Morabito, is a third resolution. I don't understand.
No, you already passed the resolution.
Yeah, we passed the resolution.
It hasn't been distributed widely. We'll put it on the website.
All right, I see. I'm sorry. I misinterpreted what you said there. It's been a long meeting. Right. Okay, if there's nothing under old business, under new business, if any trustee has a slate of officers for the June 30th meeting, And don't forget, you can also submit them on June 30th. Any trustee with a slate of offices, you can present it at this time, and it'll be passed on, moved on to the June 30th regular meeting.
I have a slate of officers, chairperson.
Okay, go ahead.
For chairperson, myself. For vice chair, Trustee Ross. For secretary, Trustee Swoma. For finance chair, Trustee Caffarella. But I would like to say, chairperson Ross, that anybody on our board is worthy of any position at any time. How I came to the conclusion is by seniority and time spent in accordance with the bylaws that we will rotate out. I would appreciate the support, but like you said, of course, anybody can put their slate in, and I'm not going to give you your farewell speech, Bill, yet, because you're still our chair.
Only to June 30th. And, Trustee Gina, I'm glad you brought that up. Any one of our people that it's a trustee have proven themselves in their jobs over many, many years and certainly could serve well. But certainly time on station and things like that count awfully heavy, too, on this, too. How many years of participation, certainly. But once again, it's open for any slates that want to be presented on June 30th. And thank you for presenting your slate. On good and welfare, God bless America. Stay healthy, stay your distance. And the next regular scheduled meeting is June 30th, 2020, but you're going to have a special meeting in between, I'm sure, and maybe even two. The last roll call. I need somebody to make a motion for adjournment.
So move, Jerry Wolfgang.
Jerry Wolfgang made the motion. Second?
Second, Gina Virtuoso.
Okay, and the last roll call. Go ahead.
Chairperson Ross.
Yes.
Gina Virtuoso. Bonnie.
Yes.
Bonnie Sloma.
Yes.
Catherine Alexander.
Kevin
yes. Clark. Jerry
yes.
Wolfgang.
Yes.
Eric Lips.
Yes. Once again, everybody, stay healthy. Thank you for your time. A long meeting. I appreciate your dedication to community college, but stay healthy, please. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll see you all. Bye-bye.